can help bring it together. But then they, we can't be the lead on this either. The Arab countries have to be the lead.
Congressional reaction to the president's plan for combating ISIS. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, September 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a former Alaska National Guard member is encouraged to come forward with her story of sexual assault.
My intention is to advocate for women. I feel someone should stand up for them and get the word out to the public.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
President Obama last night outlined a plan to defeat the terror group known as the Islamic State, or ISIS. He is calling for airstrikes, as well as for the U.S. to support the Iraqi military and Syrian fighters attacking ISIS on the ground. On Capitol Hill, the reaction was split, and not just along party lines. Both of Alaska senators were critical of the president's plan. Senator Mark Begich opposes Obama's proposal to arm Syrian fighters. He says there's no assurance those weapons won't someday be pointed at Americans. Begich also says he wants to see other countries in the region, such as Saudi Arabia, step up to fight ISIS.
We can help bring it together, but then we can't be the lead on this either. The Arab countries have to be the lead.
Senator Lisa Murkowski was traveling today, but in a written statement last night, she said the nation is still waiting for the president to produce a comprehensive plan. She says Obama must define his terms and explain to Americans what constitutes victory and what benchmarks will measure the progress. Alaska Congressman Don Young endorsed targeted airstrikes, saying they've been proven to help those on the ground defend themselves and also curb the advancement of America's enemies. Alaska's congressional candidates also weighed in on the president's speech. Begich challenger Dan Sullivan says it was a welcome change from Obama's previous remarks, which Sullivan describes as underplaying the threat while offering no clear plan. Democrat Forrest Dunbar, running against Don Young, says he also supports airstrikes, which he says could help Kurdish and other allied ground forces. The Anchorage Police Department responded to a bomb threat at the Nesbitt Courthouse this afternoon. The courthouse was evacuated around 1 p.m. and the building searched. They did not find anything concerning. Police also closed a few downtown streets as a precaution. The area was declared safe by 3 p.m., though the Nesbitt Courthouse remained closed. The investigation is ongoing and no information is available at this time. A survivor of sexual assault in the military stepped forward today at the urging of an Anchorage Women's Political Action Group. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, the survivor's story provides insight into the atmosphere within the Alaska National Guard that has led to the recent Office of Complex Investigations censure of the Guard's response to sexual assault cases and the firing of the head of the state's National Guard, Major General Thomas Katkus.
Melissa Jones was a 27-year-old specialist in the Alaska Army National Guard when she says she was raped in her off-base apartment in Anchorage. Jones, speaking by teleconference from her home in Paris, Illinois, relayed a disturbing tale of denial and backpedaling on the part of the military authorities who were supposed to handle her case. Jones had reported the attack to her immediate superior, who told her to tell the unit's chaplain. Her unit commander then told her to share the report with her sergeant. So three people knew about the attack. Jones took a week's leave, and then...
When I returned to duty, I found that my rape had become known to many people throughout the National Guard building. I was even confronted by a member of my unit, telling me he had heard two different stories about what had happened to me. The first story was that people were saying I was gang raped by my entire company. Second story was that someone had broken into my apartment and raped me. I asked him where he had heard these rumors, and he informed me that he heard the latter from my commander.
The leaked information soon was used as an excuse by the Guard's Sexual Assault Response Coordinator's office to ignore her claims.
However, when I took leave and came back, I was denied the opportunity to even talk to their office because my story had been leaked throughout the entire National Guard, and they said that they could no longer talk to me or would no longer accept my report.
Jones says she is a little unsure of many of the details of the assault, but she does remember the date, January 15, 2007. She had been with a group of National Guard peers at a popular local bar, but she says she's sure someone slipped something into one of her drinks prior to the assault. She claims she remembers little of the attack. She says she did not file a report with Anchorage police. 2 months after Jones failed to get action from her superiors, she was deployed to Iraq for the better part of a year. In mid-2008, she again attempted to pursue reporting her case, but was rebuffed. After that, she left Alaska and resigned her active duty position, and she did not get counseling until 2011, 4 years after the fact. Jones said she is now getting a discharge from the military because she suffers from PTSD, a major depressive disorder, and she at one time considered suicide. Jones says at the time of her assault, she believed it was a random event and that she did not dream that other guardsmen could have been involved.
At the time, I couldn't fathom the thought of it being one of my military peers. It wasn't until I got re-involved in this situation in 2013, I think it was, I found out how many other victims came after me. And then, of course, my story and their stories were so similar.
During her discussion with reporters, she named commanders in the Guard at the time of her assault, her immediate superiors and their superiors, all of whom she alleges ignored her claims. In response to reporters' questions, Jones said the Office of Complex Investigations did not contact her for its recent report. But last summer, the Secretary of the Army's Inspector General's office did contact her. Jones says the recent OCI report is a first step, but other changes need to happen. But at this point, she says it is one step at a time.
Several of the other advocates and I have recently requested changes to the current sexual assault policy through the Alaska National Guard IG office. We have asked that disciplinary measures be implemented and enforced for individuals that breach confidentiality regarding sexual assault victims. There needs to be accountability.
Jones was invited to speak to reporters in Anchorage by the Alaska Women for Political Action, a nonpartisan group dedicated to the political awareness of women in Alaska, according to the group's secretary, Sue Levi. Levi says her group sought Jones out.
My intention is to advocate for women, women who have been raped or battered, and because of my background in counseling women who have experienced these traumas. I feel someone should stand up for them and get the word out to the public.
Jones says she became re-involved with the issue when she realized how many other women had been assaulted in the years between 2007 and 2013. She says if she knew then what she knows now, she would have stepped up to her chain of command more. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the state GOP officially opposes marijuana legalization, but some Republicans are coming out in favor of it.
It has to do with government making decisions for you that they shouldn't.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized John Deere dealer. The Anchorage location just behind the Ship Creek Salmon Fishing offers a wide range of John Deere compact tractors. CraigTaylorEquipment.com. And by Nano Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine.
Labor organizers say they're ramping up the protest against the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Anchorage. Workers have been in contentious contract negotiations with the Texas-based company since 2009. KSKA's Ann Hillman attended a rainy rally yesterday.
About 150 people held signs reading "Boycott Sheraton" and "Protect Good Anchorage Jobs." Employees were joined by union members from across the city.
You don't get no peace!
Workers at the Sheraton haven't received a pay increase in 6 years because of failed negotiations with the hotel management. Their union, Local 878, filed more than 30 unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board against the hotel operator, Remington Lodging and Hospitality. The board ruled in favor of the union for many of the complaints, saying the hotel illegally interrogated some workers, tried to coerce them to leave the union, and illegally fired others. Local 878 President Marvin Jones says even though judges supported the workers, the employer is still filing appeals.
And so we can't win this fight in court. We're not going to win this fight in court. We're going to win this fight based on the community supporting Anchorage workers.
Gina Tubman is the server at the Sheraton and attended the rally. She was emotional when she discussed being illegally fired for passing out flyers about the boycott in 2010.
It was very hard because that was my only job.
Tubman returned to work at the Sheraton after the court order required the hotel to rehire her. She says she went back because after working there for 13 years, her coworkers were her family. But she says it's scary.
It kind of like put me in a uncomfortable position, knowing that what they did to me after being loyal to them for many, many years, and it could happen again. So it's hard.
Management at the Anchorage Sheraton declined to comment. Their parent company, Remington Hospitality, did not respond to requests for comment. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The storm system making its way up the southwestern coast of Alaska is bringing rain and high winds. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
This is a large weather front. Very large.
It's just such a massive system and is releasing a lot of energy.
Michael Lawson is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. He says after this has moved through, there are only a few places in Alaska that won't have felt its effects.
By the time it reaches its peak intensity, it will encompass most of the Bering Sea, and the frontal boundary that's associated with it will stretch all the way up into the Brooks Range and then down south over the south central.
Lawson says as the frontal boundaries push up against the northern Gulf, a mass of air gets pushed up against the coastal mountains and has nowhere to go. It gets forced into places like Turnagain Arm and Portage Valley.
As this air gets funneled through these gaps, there's a lot of pressure built up on the Prince William Sound side, and it's got to relieve itself in some way. So the air is accelerated through these channels and can manifest itself in very, very strong winds. And that's likely the situation that we're looking at here.
Lawson says the Turnagain Arm area can expect to see sustained winds of 30 to 50 miles per hour with gusts of 60 to 80 miles per hour over the next few days. The heaviest rains are expected to fall in the Seward and Cordova areas, with 3 to 6 inches projected along the Eastern Peninsula and North Gulf Coast through Saturday.
With the strong southeasterly winds that are going to be, you know, the main force behind the wind in Turnagain Arm, the mountains are going to block a lot of that moisture for, you know, the Anchorage area and the western Kenai Peninsula, but the majority of it's going to be condensed out on the eastern Kenai mountainside.
Lawson says as of Thursday afternoon, the system was gaining intensity near the western Aleutians. Jason Ozenmacher is the meteorologist who covers the more western regions. Although it is massive, he says this extratropical system isn't too out of the ordinary. It's just the first big storm of the season.
It's like anything, whether it's the first snowfall in Anchorage or whatever, there's always kind of that, you know, shock to the system type thing that you get when you had the first of anything. So I think that's why we're really trying to just get the word out, especially for the local communities along the Bristol Bay coast and into the Kuskokwim Delta.
Ozenmacher says there will be strong winds along the southwest coast of the mainland from Bristol Bay to the Kuskokwim Delta.
They're going to be looking at max gale force winds. So winds along the coastline will be gale force, 45 knots, and then inland, we might be seeing some gusts as high as 60, 65 miles an hour. So this is going to be a pretty big impact for not only small craft boaters, like in Bristol Bay, it's going to be quite windy across the mainland as well. So that's going to be an impact for hunters and people who are out recreating.
Over the next couple of days, the system will cover the entire Bering Sea. As it develops along the Aleutians over the next 24 hours, Ozenmacher says the central and eastern chain can expect heavy rain.
Areas like Atka, Adak, through Dutch Harbor, that's going to be where the bigger impact is. So we're looking at the potential for 75-mile-an-hour winds across Adak and Attica, and possibly 75-mile-an-hour winds in Dutch Harbor as well.
While coastal Alaska does get pummeled by storms every fall, this is definitely a large one. Over the next few days, residents should take precautions if they plan to recreate, hunt, or fish in affected areas. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
This spring, the Alaska Republican Party came out against an initiative that would regulate marijuana like alcohol. Now, some conservatives are declaring their support for Proposition 2. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
The conservative coalition was introduced in the lobby of the initiative's public relations firm, and reporters outnumbered the outreach team's three members. There was Bruce Schulte, a district chair for the party, Danny Bickford, a former officer of the Anchorage Young Republicans, who is now working on the marijuana campaign, and then there was talk radio host Eddie Burke, who characterized the proposition as an issue that would resonate with the Tea Party.
When you start breaking down those liberties and freedom issues, that's when people understand it's nothing to do with smoking or not smoking or whether you're going to use it or not use it. It has to do with government making decisions for you that they shouldn't.
Now, while the marijuana proposition polls better with people on the left side of the spectrum, no ballot measure campaign ever wants to be branded as partisan. Take, for example, the recent oil tax referendum. Both sides insisted they appealed to people of all political stripes, even if polling suggested a person's position on the issue was likely to correlate with their ideology. Republican and Democratic lawmakers jumped into the fray on both sides. Now, we're seeing the same thing happen with the marijuana initiative. Only the pro side is running into a little more trouble with that than the antis. Hardly any elected officials have taken public stances in support of the marijuana initiative. There's Democratic congressional candidate Forrest Dunbar and Democratic state legislator David Guttenberg, and that's about it. No Republicans running for office have explicitly said they will vote for the initiative. Coalition member Bruce Schulte thinks that's because there's a stigma attached to favoring marijuana legalization.
I think it would be hard for any legislator to come out on behalf of an activity which is in fact illegal.
The Alaska Republican Party has also taken a stand against the initiative to regulate and tax marijuana. At their annual convention in May, 75% of delegates voted for a resolution opposing Proposition 2. Schulte was in the minority, arguing that legalizing marijuana promoted smaller government.
There's good people that, you know, that went to that convention. They have their own reasons for opposing Prop 2. I happen to disagree with them. I will work side by side with those same folks on other issues and for other campaigns. But on this one, I disagree with them.
Party Chair Peter Goldberg says the official position on the marijuana measure is firm, but he understands there is some diversity of opinion among Republicans.
There's some Republicans that believe it should be legalized. That's fine. But as a party and individually, I feel it should be more difficult to get marijuana.
The opposition group Big Marijuana, Big Mistake has a number of high-profile Republicans backing it, like former Governor Frank Murkowski, who co-hosted a fundraiser on the group's behalf. Christina Wolston, a spokesperson for Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, believes her group has a stronger claim to having more conservative support.
The Alaska League of Republican Women voted to support the No On Two campaign, and they also made a financial contribution. The Republican Party has supported, and then also Republican candidates have also lined up to support the No On Two campaign.
Wolston also points to support from Democrats, like former Governor Bill Sheffield and Deborah Williams, who previously directed the Alaska Democratic Party. As for the party itself, it's avoided entering the marijuana debate. The Democrats didn't consider a resolution on that proposition at their convention, even though they weighed in on other measures. While the marijuana initiative hasn't gotten much public support from the state's elected leaders, the few public polls done on the question show a tight race, with most giving the initiative the edge. So why might that be? Pollster Mark Hellenthal thinks the marijuana measure might be susceptible to something known as a social desirability bias, where people publicly take a position they think matches the social norms, even though they might vote the other way. That could be especially true for office holders.
Public figures don't want to get branded as a druggie, and so they're somewhat reluctant to lend their name, even though they may be very supportive.
Of course, the only way to find out if the public sentiment matches the private one is to wait for the election returns on November 4th. In Anchorage, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Testimony began yesterday in Unalaska in the trial of two men accused of beating a co-worker to death outside a bunkhouse in 2012. KUCB's Annie Ropeek has more.
Leonardo Bongalto Jr. and Denison Soraya are charged with second-degree murder and first-degree assault in the death of Jonathan Adams almost 3 years ago. All three men were seafood processors at Bering Fisheries at the time, living in bunkhouses in Unalaska. A 15-person jury heard opening arguments at the city courthouse Wednesday morning. State Prosecutor James Fayette argued that Bongalto and Soraya woke Adams up to start a fight over, quote, petty bunkhouse things. Fayette said it turned into a, quote, beating that left the 55-year-old Adams dead. Fayette's main witness also began her testimony Wednesday. 25-year-old Morgan Mahalik called police about the fight back in February 2012. Mahalik described Bongalto as the primary aggressor. She said she was driving past when she saw Bongalto knock Adams out with a punch on the steps of his bunkhouse, then kick him again once he was down. Mahalik said Adams was face down on the stairs with his neck at an odd angle as she called police. Adams was pronounced dead at the local clinic a short time later. Mahalik was on the verge of tears for most of her testimony on Wednesday, calling the memory of the fight traumatic. Defense attorneys, meanwhile, argued that Bongalto and Soraya didn't mean to cause Adams' death, as the charges allege. Soraya's attorney, Paul Maslakowski, says Adams instigated what was a common fist fight between three men who'd been drinking. Bongalto's attorney, James Ferguson, called Adams' death an accident. In his opening arguments, he said, quote, "Getting in a fight where someone died and that's not what you wanted, that's an unfortunate tragedy." The jury also heard testimony from the police dispatcher who answered Mahalik's call and heard tape of the call and saw pictures of Adams' injury and his bunkhouse. Interpreters were on hand to translate the proceedings into Tagalog for Bongalto, who's 36, and Soraya, who's 42. The men didn't speak, but appeared slightly emotional as testimony wound down. The trial will continue through the week. Next, attorneys plan to have Mahalik, the witness, show how the fight happened using live volunteers in the courtroom. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Arrest totals in Alaska appear to be going down. A study by the Alaska Justice Center shows that trend holds true with drug arrests specifically. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Between 2000 and 2012, the total number of arrests in Alaska declined nearly 15%. In that time span, juvenile arrests decreased by more than half. Brad Merstall is the director of the Alaska Justice Statistical Analysis Center. He says the drug-related juvenile arrests went down around 25%, but the types of drugs involved appears to be changing.
The proportion of juvenile drug arrests for marijuana have increased notably in recent years. Meanwhile, the proportion of juvenile drug arrests for narcotics have dropped off quite precipitously.
Though drug offense arrests for adults have decreased as well, Merstall says the statistics paint a different picture for adults.
In general, the trend for adults is that adult drug offense arrests for marijuana are on the decline, and adult drug offense arrests for narcotics have been stable.
Regardless of whether the arrests involve an adult or a juvenile, one fact remains the same. the vast majority of those arrests are for possession. And that's something Murstall says it's important to understand.
There's, an inherent assumption oftentimes that that what we're talking about is the sale, manufacture, and distribution of illicit drugs.
But that's just not the case. Over the past decade, about 26% of drug-related crimes for adults and 15% of juvenile drug arrests involved the sale, manufacture, and distribution of drugs. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Delta Airlines ended their summer run between Juneau and Seattle on August 31st. An airline official says the season went well and Delta will be back next year. KTOO's Lisa Fu reports.
This summer was the first time in almost 20 years when Alaska Airlines did not have a monopoly in Juneau. In the months leading up to Delta's May 30th arrival, round-trip airfare between Juneau and Seattle went down slightly from its typical $500 range. As the date got closer, travel analyst Scott McMurrin says the price dropped to $244.
And Delta held the line on that price all the way through the summer. Alaska, for competitive service, came down and occasionally would touch that level on competing flights, but they were by no means steady at that price.
In the summer, Alaska has 5 nonstop flights between Juneau and Seattle. Delta only has 1. Even with the competition, McMurrin says Alaska's flights continue to do well.
Which is why the fare floated up. Delta's flights had plenty of room, which is why the fare stayed flat.
Data from Juneau International Airport show about 3,700 people boarded a Delta flight in Juneau during August. That means, on average, there were less than 120 people on each Boeing 757 Delta flight, which can seat 180. Delta's Seattle Vice President, Mike Medeiros, says he's happy with Delta's season in Juneau.
We were very pleased with the loads, particularly in light of the fact that it's a new and emerging market for Delta.
This summer, Delta added a seasonal flight between Fairbanks and Seattle. It's also offering year-round service between Anchorage and Seattle. All of this is part of Delta's larger plan to expand in Seattle. McMurrin says Alaska moving into Salt Lake City, Delta's primary hub west of the Rockies, is Alaska's way of fighting back in what he calls a battle for Seattle. Who's winning? McMurrin says the traveler is. He says Delta returning to Juneau next year is good news, since it'll once again mean lower airfares. But if Delta and Alaska ever do make peace, McMurrin says Juneau could go back to being a one-airline city. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez and Josh Edge reported from Anchorage, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doy Unlimited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Public Employees Local 71 asks you to slow down in construction zones while they work to keep roads safe. Public Employees Local 71, working hard for Alaska. Alaska laborers and the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities also know the importance of safe driving in construction zones. This message sponsored by Public Employees Local 71.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.